Hey folks, this is Tom Castles, former host of Databook. I just wanted to drop in for a second to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by InterSystems, the engine behind the world's most important healthcare applications. So here's the deal. InterSystems is all about helping you overcome the challenges of modern healthcare. Their advanced software solutions can help your health system transform care processes for moving to value-based care, managing population health, engaging patients, and so much more. It's all driven by a simple mission: to empower care providers and connect care communities around clearly presented, easy-to-use, and comprehensive health information. I think we can all agree that our industry needs innovation. So that's why I encourage you to take the next step today. Reach out to InterSystems on Twitter or LinkedIn, or visit them online at intersystems.com.
Hi, my name is Samara Rosenfeld.
Hi, this is Paul Abrams.
And we are here at MGM Grand in Las Vegas for the Health 2019 conference. And we are joined with Dr. Amy Abernethy. Do you want to introduce yourself for those who don't know who you are? Which I'm sure that everyone knows who you are, but let's introduce yourself.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here with you. I'm Amy Abernethy. I am the Principal Deputy Commissioner of FDA. I am also the Acting Chief Information Officer.
Okay, great. Thanks for coming today. So could you tell us more about your role and the process of developing guidance for digital health, tech, and medical devices?
So the role of FDA in developing the guidance and then ultimately regulating many of the products that sit in the digital health space is a multi-step process. First of all, we need to make sure that we have a firm understanding of the kinds of products that are being developed and sort of where the space is moving. So we continuously keep an eye out for where things are going and have different ways of communicating with stakeholders. In the process of developing guidances, which is what you specifically asked about, first we try and think through what is a framework to how this space might be regulated. So, for example, within the context of digital health, what is a transparent and risk-based framework? And then after communicating with that framework with many different stakeholders in a series of different fora, that then ultimately gets translated perhaps to a guidance. And that guidance is usually draft in the beginning, and that draft guidance then goes and through a process of being available through the Federal Register for public review. And when it is available for public review, we then get back many comments, often from industry as well as consumers and others. What's the guidance mean for me? What does it mean for our industry?
Right.
Concerns, things, ways to improve it. Those comments then are embedded, and ultimately we update the guidance based on those comments. Sometimes we reissue another draft. Sometimes we now finalize the guidance based on those comments. And so what you've seen now is a series of guidances being put out with respect to the digital health space, as well as, for example, frameworks and white papers about our thinking. So, for example, as you've seen in artificial intelligence.
Right. So, on top of that, if a medical device has connectivity through the digital framework as well, is there more different hurdles they have to go through or different steps they need to go to get approved?
So, this is really a key question for our device center and the center. So CDRH, that's responsible for actually regulating those products and making the decision, is this a regulated product? And if it's a regulated product, what is essentially the level or the risk threshold that this particular product is going to be associated with, and therefore what is actually the regulatory pathway? And you can go, if you're a device or a software manufacturer, you can go to the Center for Devices and ask questions about what would be the right regulatory path for me.
Gotcha. Okay, that was just more my edification.
Yeah.
Now, how many would you say devices and how many companies are submitting to FDA for approval, monthly, yearly.
So if we think about the device center, and you know, for the exact numbers for the device center, you know, I definitely want to refer us back to that center. But if we look at the device center, they have over 100,000 different devices that they regulate. It's really quite a remarkable distribution. But that goes everything from tongue depressors to, for example, artificial hips, to now some of the things that we're talking about here, such as digital health technology. Right. So all of these are different products that sit within the context of the device center. You know, I don't know the exact number of software as a medical device, so SAMD products that have been regulated. I recently saw that, you know, there are more than 30 products that incorporate, for example, artificial intelligence algorithms. And I don't know the day that slide was made, so I can't really tell you like sort of what has been the trajectory and what's the exact number now. But practically speaking, within the context of a center that's regulating lots of different kinds of devices, what we're seeing is a rapid increase in the numbers and kinds of software-based devices and medical products, including those that incorporate algorithms. And I think we're going to just see that continuing to go up.
So how do you ensure that those devices are safe and efficient?
So really the assessment of making sure that a medical product is appropriately safe and effective for now essentially commerce, right? So really what we do is give approval to market this particular product.
It, right?
Commercialize
yeah.
it, exactly. And that insurance of safety and effectiveness is different. I'm sure the actual regulatory process is different depending on, as I described before, the risk threshold for the device. Some are going to require additional data that need to be generated about this particular software product and device for review by FDA before the software solution of the device can be now marketed and put into commercial space. And then ultimately, another part of, I think, this evolving story, which is most relevant in this space of digital therapies, one of the other questions, and it goes back to your core question, which was around how do we ensure safety and effectiveness, is that we're starting to more and more think about what would be the post-marketing evaluation of this medical product, and specifically software, over time. So, you know, is this an assessment through, for example, continuous evaluation of post-market performance? And is there now a plan pre-specified that says, here's how we're going to evaluate this software solution or this device and understand how it's performing across time? And that's something that is an evolving story as we think more and more in this space.
So what do you think is the importance of the new guidance to advance digital health policies in 2020?
So I suspect what you're talking about is the recent package of guidances that were put out a couple weeks ago. Yeah, and you know, I see this as another step in a multi-step journey, and the journey was kicked off in the beginning of 2017 with the Digital Health Innovation Action Plan. And now what we've seen are a series of white papers and guidances that have helped to identify, for example, software as a medical device and how FDA and industry should think about that, have helped us to understand what are going to be the processes for evaluation, help us think about, you know, what is this going to look like with respect to artificial intelligence. So I think that the package of guidances that were put out a few weeks ago, really because now they're starting to become a cadence and more information coming out, I think one of the importances is the signal that as FDA we're becoming more active in this space, consistent with our 2017 Digital Health Innovation Action Plan commitment, and also consistent with where the industry is going. The guidance for software as a medical device really provides very clear information as well as for clinical decision support. So that was another guidance piece there. And I think that ultimately what this really tells you is you're going to continue to see more of these coming out over time.
I know that Scott Gottlieb, the former FDA commissioner, was a huge advocate for digital health and, you know, advancing technology and approving it. So, you know, how has the transition been since he left and Ned Sharpless came in? Has you know, there's still obviously a focus on digital health, but has there been any, you know, setbacks, or are you just continuing par the course of how you've been going?
I think it's been continuing, if not accelerated. And there's two reasons for that. Actually, three. I'll come back, right? So first is that, practically speaking, this is why I took the role of Principal Deputy Commissioner, is because I have really focused in this space of data and technology for a long time. And Dr. Gottlieb's commitment to this space moving forward was part of what compelled me to come to FDA. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to continue to, you know, wave that wand. The second is that the actual process of software as a medical device regulation, as well as artificial intelligence regulation, et cetera, really happens within our device center, which works independently, so still works underneath the commissioner, but works independently doing the work regardless of who the commissioner is in place. And so I think there's a massive commitment within the device center CDRH to continuing. I'm in that direction. And then also, we regulate and we build guidances and regulations in concert with where industry is going. And so practically speaking, as we see the whole industry around us
quickly,
changing quickly, right? Digital health moving and accelerating, you're going to see us continue to work to keep pace.
Yeah, I mean, so with that, how do you feel blockchain will affect how you do things, or would still be put into the process that you have right now?
So blockchain, artificial intelligence, I see these as enabling capabilities as well as sometimes potentially components of products that we regulate or something that sits right next to what we regulate. And, you know, with respect to blockchain as a capability, we have been contemplating how track and trace comes into play, for example, within our foods side of our house, and also with respect to drug accountability and drug manufacturing. So I think that there's a number of places where distributed ledger technology has a role, and you're going to see that continue, and FDA is going to continue to provide leadership to push all of industry to think about how to move this forward, really in the interest of public health.
Yeah, because it creates transparency, right? That's really what you want, right? So where are the stuff coming from the beginning of the cycle to the end? Right?
And you mentioned medication tracking. Can you just describe a little bit of the process in picking IBM and Walmart for that blockchain program?
Interesting question. You know, the truth is I really can't. So the detailed process is something that has happened really not at the part of the agency level that I spend my time at right now. But I will say that one of the things I've learned since coming to the agency, since I've only been there since February, mm-hmm. is that...
it's a lifetime, right?
It's a lifetime, right? really strong processes one of the critical aspects to how we do our work. And so, you know, that's going to include being very clear about here's what we're looking for, the details of the actual and the actual specifications of potential vendors to partner, and then also what we're looking for in terms of the output and the outcomes. And that process, I can anticipate, was followed as a part of the process for blockchain decisions as well.
Patient Experience Symposium is a one-of-a-kind conference that brings together leading stakeholders from across healthcare to improve and enhance patient experience. The most influential thought leaders, healthcare executives, clinical trial operators, and clinicians will come together in Massachusetts from May 11th to 13th to exchange game-changing ideas and actionable strategies to enhance patient experience in their healthcare ecosystems. Attendees will learn best practices and find answers to difficult patient experience issues and leave with the power to develop an unforgettable patient experience. To register and learn more, go to patientsymposium.com. Together, we are changing the face of patient experience.
FDA has focused a lot on real-world evidence to improve patient outcomes. You know, can you have partnerships, you're doing stuff with CODA, I know, in the oncology space. Can you talk about, you know, why is real-world evidence so important in healthcare today?
So, practically speaking, real-world evidence is information collected outside of the confines of a traditional clinical trial. And that those data can come from electronic health records, they can come from devices and wearables, it can come from claims data. And really, the question with real-world evidence is how can those data be curated and assembled and analyzed in a way that gives us confidence in understanding, for example, the safety and effectiveness of a medical product or how that product has been performing across time. How is the FDA sort of thinking about real-world evidence within the context of this space? 21st century cures compelled us to start to understand how real-world evidence could be confidently used. Our drug center has a framework that was put out in December that identified three core components for evaluating real-world evidence and how we're going to use it, especially on the drug side. So one is data fit for purpose, the second is analysis fit for purpose, and the third is what are the use cases or tasks where we can put real-world evidence into play. Similarly, in the device side of the house, we've also had a book of work happening as it relates to real-world evidence around devices, and can real-world evidence be used for example, device performance across time? And I think what we're going to see is the agency continuing to understand how does real-world evidence perform for us, right, for the tasks that we have at hand, understanding our devices performing well, understanding safety, and being able to surveil for safety concerns across time for drugs. Can real-world evidence help to plan better clinical trials? Can that real-world evidence help to take the place of tasks clinical trials used to be the only way to get there? And these are the things we're going to try and figure out over time.
Now, I just have one more question, and it's kind of a loaded question, I suppose.
No.
Where do you see digital health intersecting with personalized medicine?
Oh, I think digital health is critical for personalized medicine. There's so many places where digital health is going to help us personalize. So first of all, as an example, personalized medicine and moving in the direction for a personalized medicine ideally means that we have more and more details about the individual and also how medical products perform in a person like you, right? So if a person has a background problem with kidney concerns or is already on three other medicines, being able to now understand how that drug actually is going to perform in a person like you means that we need to have real-world data, for example, to complement clinical trials, and the real-world data has come from the digital health space.
Genomics could be a big...
Genomics is another example, is a space where sort of, and for example, next-generation sequencing then give us data sets that then help us understand how we can start to personalize. So that's one way that I think digital health helps us personalize, is by actually giving data that allows us to know the details of the person.
I think we're closer now with the changes in digital health to the sci-fi future we imagined when we were younger, at least I did, for healthcare. And I think that is getting closer and closer. I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but for me as a nerd inside, I really feel like we're getting closer and closer to maybe the tricorder or to a treatment process that would say get rid of OA, right? So you don't have osteoarthritis and don't need a surgical intervention. Maybe there's a fluid dynamic or a tissue repair that you do.
A lot more details about you that can be sort of picked up through the tricorder,
right?
Now matched to what we know about any specific medicine. So, so you get personalized because you get better matching.
Right. Like,
that's really fundamental. And the one other thing to mention is that digital health is going to help us with clinical decision support.
100%.
And personalization means that you and your doctor need to, in very fast fashion, make really personalized, detailed decisions. And I think clinical decision support is going to be a critical part of that story.
And I think AI actually helps with that, right? Those decision-making process, augmenting or giving extra tools to the physician when he runs through that, or they run through that algorithm of like, all right, you have, it seems like a sinus infection, but let's just check to see what else could be going on. Maybe there's a sublining thing behind it, whatever, right? I'm just using that as a very high-level thought process, but...
Well, and you're absolutely right. And then, to sort of build on that, ultimately, digital health tools that help us expand the system of data and continuously aggregate the system of data, and then AI solutions that help us better match patients. And then because the data is continuously aggregating, the AI solutions now learn and update, and so the matching process gets better and better and more precise over time. So personalization gets better over time.
You know, we really appreciate you being able to speak to us, and you provided some really amazing insights, and you know, we're looking forward to, you know, yeah.
You're in charge.
All right.
Look
so
forward to talking more.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Hey folks, this is Tom Castles, former host of Databook. I just wanted to drop in for a second to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by InterSystems, the engine behind the world's most important healthcare applications. So here's the deal. InterSystems is all about helping you overcome the challenges of modern healthcare. Their advanced software solutions can help your health system transform care processes for moving to value-based care, managing population health, engaging patients, and so much more. It's all driven by a simple mission: to empower care providers and connect care communities around clearly presented, easy to use, and comprehensive health information. I think we can all agree that our industry needs innovation. So that's why I encourage you to take the next step today. Reach out to InterSystems on Twitter or LinkedIn, or visit them online at intersystems.com.